Everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here on the main feed. My name is Kenny McIntosh, and I'm waiting for that weekend to begin because it doesn't feel like Groundhog Day, and I'm joined by Sondra. Hi, Sondra. How are you today?
Hi, Kenny. I'm doing pretty well. Wrestling just is keeping happening, which is crazy, right? Like, even though I feel like that's how I kind of determine what day of the week it is right now. Like, this week actually feels quite busy because we did Judgment Day with Finn, and then we have Double or Nothing this weekend, and I'm like, a double pay-per-view week. I feel so busy right now, even though I'm like not going to my physical job. I feel like more stuff is happening, which is good. You know, I'm going to apologize right now if you can hear the musical accompaniment from my neighbor across the street who is blasting music currently. Can't do anything about it. It's just going to be happening.
It's the joys of independent podcasting.
The joys of independent podcasting. When, I mean, a lot of people are having to figure out, like, this makes me laugh, and it's not shade to anyone, but like people who normally podcast in a studio, right? Which seems like this crazy luxury to me that I just can't fathom, like going to a studio to record a podcast. And people are trying to like figure out navigating like podcasting from home. And I'm just like, we've been set up for this, man. Like, we don't have to get a producer on the line. We don't know what a producer is. I mean, we know what one is. We're not stupid. But like, it's just us. It's just us doing the thing.
Well, also, like, going to a studio just feels a lot like work.
Doesn't it?
But not that this isn't, I mean, of course this is work, but like, it's like, I don't know, like, it's funny, the thing that I don't know if anybody else has found this, but like in lockdown I felt like, how did people before this have 9-to-5 jobs? I am busier now than I was before. Like, I every day there's podcast stuff to do, or there's, you know, work stuff to do, or there's a new show to watch, or there's the dog to take a walk, or there's like, you know, your bit of exercise that you get, or there's, you have to buy something at the store one every couple of days. Like, there's so much stuff to do. I don't know how we worked before this.
I don't know. Like, I feel like I'm busy too. Like, I feel like I'm busier than I was when I was going to my job, which is very strange. But I feel like I have more like online social engagements now too. Like, I've been actually talking to people more that I don't normally talk to, and like trying to video call people more often, which I know you hate, but like, you know, for some of us, it's kind of nice. And it's, I don't know, like, it's parts of quarantine are good. Like, parts of them just make me want to scream. Like, when my phone is popping up memories of Vegas last year and Glasgow 2 years ago. And I'm just like, I want to leave my house. But like, there are some good things about it. Like, I'm trying to focus on the positives today. I'm getting to groove to the music from my neighbor across the street, a free concert, you know.
You're really trying to really sell to us that that's not annoying you, right?
It's really bothering me a lot.
Like,
it's
like,
true.
Because like, Sondra will sometimes go, do you hear that? And I'll be like, what? She'll like, you can't hear that crane-like noise in the background? I'll be like, nope, can't hear a bit of it.
Can you hear the music?
Wait. No, not one iota.
Not at all?
And that... But that's why, like, sometimes if you go, oh, I heard this thing, I'm like, you need to tell me when it's not a Sondra thing and when it's, like, a real-life thing.
Well, that's why sometimes I tell you that there's a thing, and then you're like, it'll be fine, and then you're like, why didn't you tell me about this? And I'm like, I did tell you, but you thought it was just me being paranoid.
I just thought it was one of your usual things, but it's like, I can't hear it.
But I'm the girl who cried sounds.
The girl who cried sounds. No, and just to clarify, right, I am really happy if Zoom gets you through lockdown. Look, for me, work-wise, it's really great to have Zoom and to do video calls. The thing that I just don't want to do Zoom. I don't like to do it. I don't mind doing it for interviews, but like, I don't like being on camera. I don't really like how I look on camera. So like, I'm not comfortable in that regard. So, but you know, it's the kind of happy that other people want to do it. I just don't want to be made to have to do it.
Right.
With people. But then it's like, I don't want to go on Zoom for a call. I don't want to go on Facebook and do day one of my 10 favorite albums. I just don't want to do those things. I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. It's just not for me. But my fear that I sometimes get my anxiety is that, like, do people think I'm an arsehole because I'm not contributing to the thing that they like to do during lockdown? And I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't care enough to do it, but I do think
Yeah,
about it.
I
I
am where
do.
most of your memes go to die. Like, if you tag me in challenges, a lot of the time I'm like, I can't think of 10 things most of the time, and B, it seems like a lot of work. Like, I did the 30 Days of Songs thing on Instagram, but it's not like I'm gonna tag anyone else to do it.
Yeah, like
It
if
was
you
like I
want to
did it 'cause
do
I
it,
wanted to do it.
my favorite thing to do. So, like, look, all respect to the frontline key workers out there. You are, very, very, very helpful in this situation, and we all applaud you.
I love the
But,
tone
like,
with which you're prefacing this. I have no idea what you're
because,
about to say.
like, my mom and I were driving from, we were going to, like, a moving house, which during a pandemic, of course, but, like, a moving house, and I got the place today, so that's great news.
Oh,
So I'm going to be moving
congratulations. That's awesome.
late June, so happy days. I'll need to send you the video of the place, Sandra.
Yes,
But
please. I want to see it.
so I went with my mom to see the place, because the guy was like, we're not really supposed to, like, do this, but, like, we'll just be socially distant. And we were like, okay, cool. And we were driving, and there was somebody in front of us who had this, like, massive sign in the back of their car going, I'm a key line worker, I'm allowed to be out driving. And my two questions internally were, number one, who's pulling you up for it? And number two, where did you get that sign? Like, is that now, like, are we so in pandemic life that that's a sign that people stalk?
Was it like a handmade sign, or was it like a full-on printed, like you went to Kinko's and had this
Printed,
done?
you had this done.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that's great for you. Like, I'm glad that you're proud. For sure. It
Because I
seems
like
like a lot.
because I saw, like, a really funny meme today, but it was like something about, like, how many sentences can a key worker get out without saying they're a key worker? And so there are funny jokes to it, but, like, obviously they but then last
Well, and I
night
remember before I quit being a key worker, which
I
sometimes I
remember.
feel kind of guilty because I'm like, all these people are out there working, trying to keep society good. But also, my place of employment has no social distancing in practice, and even my boss isn't wearing masks. I was talking to another coworker, and they were like, yeah, you probably made the right decision. I was like, yeah, I kind of feel like I did because.
Well, I mean, the thing about the what was I going to say? So there's the whole the, so there's the key workers who are helping keep us going.
And like
There
people
was a
can't get
point.
out a sentence without saying that they're a key worker.
There was a story that was going to come out of that. What was the story?
I don't know what the story was.
Oh
I'm not
God,
inside your
it's
head. I can't help
gone.
you out here.
It's gone. What an absolute shit show. That I've just in the middle of a story just forgotten it.
It's always a problem. But like, I mean, legit, like everyone who is out there keeping society going, I do applaud you. I just don't know
I've
that a
got it.
sign in the back of your car
I've
is
got it now.
necessary.
Do you in the US, I mean, I guess you guys don't have this because why would you clap for corporations? But, like, we have, like, the clap for the NHS, like, you clap that you applaud them. So, like, it's like
Oh no,
day
we
80
do
or
clap for
something.
corporations in America. That's kind of our whole deal. Like,
Oh yeah,
people
I
fuck
forgot.
off, but corporations, we love them.
So
Not that I'm
every night
salty.
at all. Every night, I think it's every night, or is it every Thursday? Maybe it's Thursday.
Every
It was like it
Thursday
happened
at 8 or something, right?
every Thursday 8, there's, like, a clap for Keyline or
How do I know this?
So I did it, like, initially for a few weeks, and then I was kind of like, because I've, like, read a lot of articles about people who work in the NHS who are like, we don't really want clapped for anymore. We just want better working conditions and more money. It's like, fair. But anyway, so I was out in the garden with Hulk, and then my upstairs neighbor, she came down with her dog Milo, and the dogs were playing as we were kind of chatting at a social distance, and then everybody started clapping. So then we had to start clapping. So then it looked like we'd left our house to come and clap in the garden. And then I felt really awkward because I was like, I don't want to, but then I couldn't leave because you can't leave in the middle of the minute. So we just had to stand and clap in the garden, and it was a very awkward experience. But and then people were banging drums, so I just feel like you need to let me know, do I need to buy a drum kit? Our place is still open. I did actually ask my mum. My mum is friends with somebody who knows a hairdresser, and I was about to say, would they, if I paid them £50, give me a socially distant haircut? But my mom was like, I don't think that's going to work. Because hairdressers are, I think we're about 3 months away. No, July 8th, if everything goes to plan in Scotland, hairdressers would open again.
Oh,
So,
really? Not until then?
yeah, because it's like, in Scotland, there's like four phases to get out of lockdown, and phase three would be where pubs and hairdressers and all that can open and be socially distant. So, and my hair is not going to survive until July the 8th. And
I mean,
then,
I really feel like I've been preparing for this quarantine my entire life because I don't like leaving my house that much anyway. And also, I get my hair cut maybe every year and a half.
like, how many inches do you get it cut every year and a half?
Usually like 4 or 5.
And how many inches long is it usually?
I don't know. I haven't measured it. It's down to my butt, however long that is. It's a few
Well, you know,
feet.
there's something for pervs to work out. But yeah, lockdown life is good. Hulk got a new cow toy, which we've called Hulkogan.
Which was adorable.
So
I
he
saw the
is.
picture on Instagram.
He's very taken with that. He's already bitten one of his ears off. We should mention, in a serious note, obviously again, thoughts out to family and friends of Shad Gaspard, who was found earlier this week. And I think we mentioned it on the we. I think we mentioned it somewhere else, but I want to mention it again in case we
Think we
didn't.
mentioned it maybe on the overrun that we did
Yes, it was the
earlier this
overrun. I
week.
want. He was 39, and like the last thing he did was, you know, make sure his son was okay. And yeah, Crime Time were a riot. They were so fun, and yeah, it just sucks.
It sucks
So
a lot. Like, I can't pretend that I've really seen a lot of his career because I think Crime Time left, or Crime Time split up, I think, just before I started watching because JTG was still doing some stuff, but I think Shad was gone by that point. But I mean, everyone has had the most kind words to say about him. I didn't even, I'd forgotten until I saw a tweet earlier, but where we watched WrestleMania last year, where like the group of us who didn't like pay a ridiculous amount of money to go to the stadium, like where we watched at the bar, Shad Gaspard and MVP were both there, and there was a video on Twitter that I put of them reacting to Kofi Kingston's title win, and it made me cry again because I was like, that was such a special night and it was so cool, and like I didn't get to meet Shad again. Like, I wasn't really that familiar with his career, so I can't pretend that I was like the biggest fan of his or anything like that, but just, I don't know, knowing that he got to see that and like just all of the stories that have come out about him being just an awesome guy, and it sucks. It sucks a lot. It's just really tragic.
yeah, so the I guess from there, the other another news story that's come up, that's just Vince McMahon might be buying the XFL. I
Because of
mean,
course. Because of course.
what? Like, how? How is
Because America, I just can't. Like, I just can't.
XFL 3.0?
But like
Yeah.
the fact that that's even a thing, right? Because all of like the way that you move money around in corporations, and I can't pretend to understand it because I've never had enough money to do it, but like the way you can move money around in corporations and declare bankruptcy for the corporation, but then like, does he want to buy the XFL personally?
Yes, I think he would be buying it personally. That's how you get around it,
Which is the
because
difference, because it would be like then his personal money instead of like taking stocks out and putting them in different stocks and companies and all this. But to orchestrate bankruptcy to try to get out of your debts, to then just try and personally purchase the thing that went bankrupt, I just can't. I
I mean,
just
look,
can't.
if it ever got to a point where like something happened where like Inside the Ropes went bankrupt, I would totally buy it. So I'm just like the biggest hypocrite on the planet. But I don't have any money, so I don't know what I would buy it with. Maybe a credit card. I'd try and get a credit card.
I mean, yeah, I guess you could try, but who would be selling it is the thing.
The what would it be, the creditors?
I don't know how
Or
any of
the
this
no.
works.
Anyway, yeah, there's a lot of words. Anyway, I was going to ask you as well. I don't know if you have. Did you get a chance to see The Dark Side of the Ring with Owen Hart?
I did. Yes, I did see it. Martha
So,
Hart is
talk me.
my new hero. I love her.
I do you know what I think you would love, actually? I think you would love the book Broken Hearts that she wrote.
I really do
Like,
want to read it,
it's
actually,
great.
because before I saw the documentary, before I saw Dark Side of the Ring, I was familiar enough with the story, actually quite familiar with it, because I've read various accounts and I'd heard that there was negligence, but I didn't realize just how negligent the company was. Like using that type of clip that's made for sailboat rigging, that like he wasn't even attached with a proper clip to be rappelled down from the ceiling 80 feet. It's insane. Like the negligence is insane. And I wasn't that familiar with how much work Martha Hart personally put into it, I guess, because I had always heard that the company sued Martha, and I think we talked about that in our retro journey a year ago, right? Because we covered Over the Edge, and we talked about the Owen tribute show and all that kind of stuff. But just seeing her get to tell her story must have been really difficult for her to do, but from all accounts, it sounds like she's really glad that she did it, and I'm glad that we got to see her side, because I think everything you hear is either from WWE or from wrestling people, and they talk about how Owen wasn't necessarily like completely in love with wrestling the way some of people in his family were. The fact that he was a family man, that he always wanted to get out and take care of his kids, and you know, I mean, they even showed the video on the documentary of him saying, you know, maybe, you know, in however many years I can, you know, get out and I can just spend more time with my family. And it's heartbreaking to see that because he never got that chance. And those kids never got a chance to know their dad growing up, right? Like Athena, his daughter, has vague memories of her dad taking her to the zoo. And she was 3 years old when he died. So I'm kind of amazed that she has any memory whatsoever. And some of it's probably pieced together, you know, from pictures and from stories and all that kind of stuff. But it's nice that she has those vague recollections. But like, it just sucks. 'Cause I mean, my brother was 5 when her mom died, and he doesn't remember her at all. So it's just, I was really feeling for the kids too. But just all of the work that Martha Hart went into, like, did, and she basically decided, right, now I'm a single mom with 2 young kids, but I'm gonna try and find justice for my husband, and using the settlement money to start the foundation that has helped so many people get into college and find homes. I don't know. I love her. She's like my new hero. I love her so much.
The thing that I've never understood is, because I remember reading the book Broken Hearts years ago, and it was just it's a gut-wrenching book to read, because you read this like love that these two people had, and then the and you know obviously what happened, and like I feel like, you know, even if you were to go, because look, obviously WWE did not want that to happen. Vince McMahon was very, very, very remorseful that it happened and wanted to give them money and stuff. They wanted to take care of them. That is true. But at the same time, Martha, you know, if you read her book, she didn't want any of the funeral footage showed on Raw, and it was showed anyway. And that was kind of the beginning of, like, you know, well, you're not really doing what I need you to do for me to feel that you're on side. And then everything escalated. The thing that I've never understood since the time is that, like, if you're a wrestling fan, whether you don't watch WWE and you love New Japan, or whether you love WWE, whatever it is, I don't understand why anybody thinks that they have the right to decide that Owen Hart needs to be in the WWE Hall of Fame over his wife, because to me, she gets the final vote. And like, I love Owen Hart, and I pump a lot of my own money into WWE, and I follow their stuff, and we cover it all the time. It's one of the main parts of our lives, really, right?
Yeah, I
But at the
mean, it
same
is.
time,
It's our livelihood.
I think that you're able to have that distinction of, even though we enjoy this thing and it is a big part of our lives, at the end of the day, in this scenario, Martha Hart needs to have the say. And I think for her, you know, she said in one of the interviews that she did, you know, they don't have a physical Hall of Fame. And I think that I think if in 20 years there is a physical Hall of Fame, and they want to say, look, you know, they come to her and say, look, we want to, you know, give this money to the Owen Hart Foundation. We want to put him in the Hall of Fame, but we won't do it at a ceremony. We will profit no money out of it whatsoever. Maybe then she'll feel differently. But if you look at what she doesn't want, and it's very clear, she doesn't want a ceremony where the people who she felt were responsible for Owen's death make money off of his name. And I just don't get why MD can't get that that takes precedent over a wrestling fan who thinks that they somehow, oh, Owen would have wanted it. How do you know? How do you know what Owen would have wanted? You didn't know him.
Yeah, I feel like Owen's, you know, wife and children, who, you know, didn't get the chance to know their father because of the negligence of this company, but, you know, like his wife and children have that say, right? And I mean, his son obviously I'm sure that his mother has influenced his opinion, as well she should, but even hearing his son Oj on the documentary say, no, I would never allow my father to go into the Hall of Fame. So even like, say, years and years and years down the line, after Martha Hart, you know, is old and passed away, whatever, like, his son still is very adamant about the fact that, no, he doesn't want that, because he, like his mother, doesn't want this company profiting off of the image of his father, which I think is more than reasonable. And, you know, to my knowledge, WWE has never offered them any sort of compromise in terms of, like, we'll donate the money to the foundation, because WWE putting people into their Hall of Fame is for WWE's profit. And I'm not saying that's inherently wrong, but they're not doing this as a goodwill gesture, right? Like, it is an entertainment program to make money, the same way as Raw is, the same way as SmackDown is. They would want to sell Owen Hart merch if he were to be put into the Hall of Fame. They always have that, like, Hall of Fame section at the merch store at WrestleMania, right? And I totally understand his family not wanting the company to profit off of his death, especially because they were so disrespectful in the wake of it. Right? Like, Vince McMahon did not come off in a good light. They really didn't have anyone who was pro WWE on the documentary, which was maybe a little bit of I think this should have been a two-parter, first of all, because it, like, there was so much that was missed out. But I mean, the bits of Vince McMahon that you saw, you know, him saying to someone in a court case, I don't appreciate your tone. Like, just, I can see why he and Trump are friends. I don't know, like, Vince McMahon didn't come off in a good light, nor should he, because he seemed to just deny responsibility. And then showing the footage of Owen's funeral on Raw was just, that's unforgivable, you know? Like, what right do you have to disregard a family's wishes like that?
I think part of the problem, to play devil's advocate, I think part of the problem is that in wrestling, people feel like that is your family, as opposed to your real family who are at home or whatever.
Well, there's definitely a sense of entitlement and ownership over wrestlers.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I think it was 2010 or 2011 where they did a Hart Family DVD and they had footage of Owen on it, like a section on Owen. And I'm sure there was some legal thing between Martha and WWE over that. And, I mean, the thing that, yeah, for me, it's like, you know, people go, oh, you know, how am I supposed to celebrate Owen and watch his matches? They're everywhere. They're all over the network. Like, where are you not able to watch Owen Hart stuff or, you know, whatever? And it's like, I remember when I was spending time with Brett this past year, I kind of deliberately stayed away from this stuff because I think Brett just has it in his mind because wrestling is so real to him, mm-hmm, that, you know, the legacy of Owen Hart's wrestling career will depend on how he is viewed 100 years from now, and that's going to depend on how WWE present, because they are pretty much are the people who write the history. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where he's coming from, but at the same time, I just don't think you can trump what Martha Hart's wishes are, so I just kind of stayed away from it for the most part because I just didn't want to really get into it. But
it's not really, I mean, maybe you would get a soundbite, but it's not worth trying to get a soundbite and just dredging up really painful stuff for him either, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you're not an asshole.
No, there's plenty of people that can do that instead of me. The Dark Side of the Ring was great. The Dark Side of the Ring series is just incredible. It's so well shot, and like the way they do the, you know, the kind of reenactments in the dark with the gear on and stuff, it's so visual and it gives I found that the most, I cried like three times during the Owen Hart one, but like,
yeah,
one of the bits was when like she took Oj up and walked where he walked.
Yeah.
You know, like that was just like, oh my God, so painful to watch.
So painful. And like, I mean, as kids especially, that's so hard. Like, so hard.
But yeah, it's well worth a watch. And if you're in the UK, I know a lot of people are saying, you know, how do you check out? You can go on YouTube, and there's always links to the episodes.
I think Vice puts them on YouTube. Are those not available in the UK?
No, they're not.
Oh, okay.
So, well,
I mean, they are. If you just use Google, like, don't ask us. Don't ask us how to use Google. Just use Google for yourselves.
So we are tomorrow night is Double or Nothing. Live in Daly's Place, and this is now 1 year since AEW started pay-per-view. They've had four so far with Double or Nothing, All Out, Full Gear, and then Revolution. So we're kind of at the beginning of the second year, How do you feel about AEW's sort of pay-per-views for the first year? Did they stand up as good shows? Are they kind of what you expected them to be? How are AEW doing 1 year into kind of doing proper shows?
I think they're doing well. I mean, I've enjoyed Dynamite week to week quite a bit, and I feel like the pay-per-views have paid off stories, like the pay-per-views that have been in existence since Dynamite has happened. I think they've been a lot of fun, and I enjoy their programming and I enjoy their roster on the men's side quite a lot. I really wish that they had more women's stories and that things would be a little bit more even there, but we'll get into more specifics when we talk about Dynamite. But I mean, they seem to be doing well. They seem to be doing good numbers, right? I think some of their shows pre-Dynamite were a little eh, like Fyter Fest and Fight for the Fallen. I can't really remember much of what happened there. But I mean, in terms of Double or Nothing, I'm looking forward to Double or Nothing tomorrow. Is that when that takes place? What day is it right now?
Tomorrow, yeah.
Tomorrow. It's Friday today. Okay. But yeah, I think that Double or Nothing looks like a great show, and I think that they've been building to it very well, especially considering the restrictions they've had in quarantines. So yeah, like I've enjoyed their pay-per-views quite a bit, and I they feel a little bit more kind of like their television programming. It feels more fresh than WWE, I think, especially because they don't have as many pay-per-views. So I kind of like that they're spaced out a little bit more.
Yeah, I think they've done a good job. I mean, the women's division is a disaster. It has been since day one. It's not really got any better. They've got like elements of good stuff for me in the women's division. Like Britt Baker is probably my favorite. But
They
we
seem
talked
to
about
be
this before. It
making
can.
incremental progress finally, but it's like it's way too slow.
Well, it feels like we've got Nyla Rose, who's like this big bad monster, and we've got Britt Baker, who's this really cool, cocky shit heel. And then we don't really have the baby faces that are hot enough to kind of combat it right now. So I'm hoping that maybe that changes. I mean, they've given us a lot of big matches in the first year. You know, we had the Cody and Dustin match, the Omega and Jericho, the Paige and Jericho, the big Omega and Moxley match, which kind of divides opinion from Full Gear. They've had a lot of big matches on the shows, and they've made it a kind of variety show. So I think they've done a good job on pay-per-view. And do you think Double or Nothing, does it feel like a big show? I mean, obviously, without having crowds, have they done a good enough job promoting the card, do you think?
I think so. I think the stories feel like a culmination, and it's hard because I feel like some of their stories do culminate on TV because the pay-per-views are more spread out, but it's been kind of nice, like having, I don't know, like Brodie Lee versus Jon Moxley is a match that I'm really looking forward to. I think that that is going to potentially be really good. I hope that it's really good, but I'm kind of into the story right now based on what they've been doing on television. Lance Archer versus Cody feels like a huge deal, right? And it feels like that should culminate at a pay-per-view. I can't say that Hikaru Shida versus Nyla Rose has been built like phenomenally. That feels more like a television title match than, you know, a big pay-per-view blow-off, but at least they are sort of kind of trying to build a number one contender-ish. Like, their women's division is just not great. But a lot of the stuff that they've been doing has been good, and it feels like there are some blockbuster matches on Double or Nothing, so it feels like a big show to me.
Yeah, it feels like they've got a good card. My two matches I'm looking forward to the most are Cody and Lance Archer and the Stadium Stampede match. What ones are you looking forward to the most?
Probably Moxley and Brodie Lee and Cody versus Archer. The Stadium Stampede is probably going to be bonkers and a lot of fun and really, really cool, but I just don't look forward to multi-man things as much as I do like individual stories, I guess.
You like when the focus is on two competitors striving to become the best.
Exactly. I like when it's, you know, a personal issue, brother.
Personal issue.
But I think they've done well to build the Stadium Stampede, right? Like, I think that they've done well to form factions in AEW and have everyone's alliances be understood. And I know where everyone stands, and I know why people are fighting other people. So, I mean, that's a good thing. I'm definitely looking forward to it too. I like when it's, you know, more of a one-on-one confrontation, I suppose.
And then the other thing I was going to ask you about before we talk about AEW and NXT was What was the other thing? Why is my mind doing a complete blank?
I don't know. What is going on today?
I don't know what's going on. Okay, well, let's go into AEW and NXT and we'll come back to it. What show do you want to talk about first?
Let's talk about AEW first, since we're already kind of talking about AEW with Double or Nothing.
Sure. And what do you I mean, so we saw the kind of final build for Moxley and Brodie Lee, where we saw Moxley defeat 10. Brodie Lee still got the belt, and Brodie Lee kind of cut the go home promo. We got a promo from Moxley. I've got to say, like I am just underwhelmed by this week. Like I was really hoping for like a big boost, and it's just like it's fine, but I'm just finding that everything else and the other big things in the show just feel so much more, I don't know, impactful. And I feel like Brodie Lee's really got his work cut out for him tomorrow because, like, I've seen him do interviews where he's really funny and he's, like, really charismatic, and it just doesn't match with the Exalted One at all. And I don't know how you fix that, but yeah, I was slightly underwhelmed. Did it work better for you this week in the final build for them to have the title match? I mean, does it feel like the main event of tomorrow?
It's no. Cody versus Lance Archer feels like the main event of tomorrow. It's fine. I have all the goodwill in the world toward Brodie Lee and toward the Dark Order. I've always liked Dark Order stuff more than you. I can't help but like looking at it as kind of crucible light and seeing like, oh man, I've seen this done so much better elsewhere. But I think they're making steps in the right direction because Brodie Lee seems to have a little bit more purpose now. And I like the fact that we're kind of exploring the relationship between him and his underlings. Like, we know that Brodie Lee isn't going to save anyone who works under him, right? Like, this doesn't feel like Inner Circle, where I believe that Chris Jericho would save Sammy Guevara from Jon Moxley breaking his arm. Brodie Lee, you know, I don't know if it was to punish 10 for losing or if he just doesn't care, but you know, like Jon Moxley breaking 10's arm afterwards and using the chairs on him, I thought was sadistic of Jon Moxley and kind of fitting for his character, right? Even if he's a babyface, he's still going to be kind of off the handle and he's going to be kind of crazy. And I think Brodie Lee just trying to be this aloof corporate person, there's still kind of a disconnect there, but it's working a little bit better for me because he's coming across as more of a leader, I guess. Like, I really want it to work so badly, and I think that they're making steps in the right direction. The story is starting to form a little bit and make a little more sense to me, even if it's not exciting and vibrant and colorful. At least there's like the shape of something that I understand. Whereas at first, with the Vince McMahon parodies and whatnot, I didn't understand how that fit with the Exalted One at all. But I guess Brodie Lee is trying to be more of a like a corporate and a more of a business leader, kind of as the Exalted One, which I think that's the disconnect. Like, why are you a business dude? Why are you in suits? Why are you just like this powerful mogul who also has masked people fight for you? And like, what are you? I don't understand. So I don't know. Like, I mean, his promo was fine. It explained his motivations. I want Brodie Lee versus Jon Moxley to be good so badly. Like, that's the one that I really, really want to be good on the show, so that Brodie Lee can continue to make steps in the right direction. I don't know. I feel like I've seen the story done so much better elsewhere that I'm probably attributing aspects of the Crucible to Brodie Lee's mentality and his motivation just because they're so similar in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, I hope they do. I hope they do well tomorrow. I feel like Moxley is, yeah, I hope they do well. Is the point. Elsewhere on the show, we also had a really fun match with Orange Cassidy and Rey Fénix, which I thought was very fun.
It was great. It was awesome. It was always going to be awesome, but it was awesome.
And you know we you know Kip Sabian came out towards the end, sitting on a ladder. Phoenix got the win, and then we basically saw a bunch of the casino ladder match people come out, and there was a big brawl. And I know Phoenix got injured here, which hopefully, I mean, apparently he is cleared for Double or Nothing, so he is going to be in the match. But this was fun, and we should mention there was also a video right before the match with Pac, who is telling Orange Cassidy that he's marked and to kind of watch out. So I thought this was all pretty good story stuff.
It was good story stuff. I loved the video from Pac. It was nice to see him, because even if he's not going to be on the show competing, it's nice to kind of keep him in our consciousness and remind us that he is a person who exists and is important and is great, because he is important and he is great. So yeah, I mean, Orange Cassidy versus Phoenix, they're both awesome. Like, of course this was going to be great. Phoenix's dive where he got hurt was, it made me nervous. Like, I wasn't sure how hurt he got or what happened. I mean, he popped right back up and was doing stuff because he's a crazy person, but to just like kind of freeze in midair and then just fall straight to the ground where there are all these people like not catching you, it was very uncomfortable for me to watch. But yeah, I liked the melee at the end, the casino battle royal or ladder match thing. It's not one of the things that I'm like the most looking forward to on the show, but I think it has the potential to be really fun because I like a lot of the entrants. I mean, seeing Colt Cabana do an Aussie moonsault, I haven't seen him do that in a while.
That was crazy.
So it was kind of nice to see him just having fun and being like, okay, sure, like this is happening now. So yeah, I mean, I like a lot of the competitors in it, and it'll be interesting to see who comes out victorious in that, I think.
And where I think it was a good variety show was like Arn Anderson and Jake Roberts just talking shit to each other was like made for me. Like two old guys just shouting is absolutely what I would like to see. So Jake basically does his whole spiel. My only downfall to this is I would have liked to hear from Brandy at this point.
Yeah, where like really is to... she?
Like, I mean, maybe it's going to be explained that she didn't come out before because she wasn't going to play into Jake's games. I mean, I'm positive she's going to be involved in the match, but yeah, it feels a bit kind of...
feels like a major oversight, especially considering her promo before the snake incident, that she was like, if you slap me, I'm going to slap back, and you can't quiet me down. I'm not like a quiet woman, and she's just been a quiet woman this whole time.
I assume they have something planned for Double or Nothing, and that's why we've had her. So I hope what they've got planned is good. I thought Arn and Jake did a pretty good job here. I liked Arn sort of, you know, question that Mike Tyson is going to be there, and then Jake saying that he's promised Lance Archer the first shot at Tyson, and all that kind of stuff. But the thing where it lost me a little bit, because I thought it was really good, was at the end when they were like squaring off. I was like, no.
No.
No, 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 no.
Absolutely not.
Because Arn has put on a lot of weight. So, like, I think Arn Anderson probably could still do a spine buster because he's insane. But, like, I've not seen Jake do anything physical in, like, 15 years. And, I know he does yoga and stuff.
Nor would I want to.
Yeah, just, like, I don't know what the... I feel like when you have one, like, one of them could be involved in something, I think that definitely we should see Brandy doing something to Jake. Or maybe, you know, maybe there's a moment where Arn does something to somebody who runs in, maybe Sean Spears or something. You could do something like that. But I think Arn versus Jake, just stay away from that.
Yeah, I'm not into it. Arn versus Jake was like their contract situation, whatever this was. It was fine. It probably just wasn't aimed for me, I guess. Like, I like the idea of them talking shit, but it kind of felt like a long exercise and two old dudes talking. And, well, they're good at talking. I didn't care that much about it. So it's not like it made me angry. It's not like I don't think it had a place on the show, but it just wasn't my thing. But then, yeah, for them to square off at the end, I was like, if you're teasing a physical confrontation that you want me to want, you have not done your job, because that's just not something I want to see. I like that AEW uses some of these legend characters, right? To use WWE terminology, I guess, but uses some of the legends of wrestling to highlight the feuds of the guys and I wish girls who are actually on the show. And I like when the actual wrestlers and performers are forefront. And this felt a little bit more like the adults are coming in to handle your business, I guess.
It makes sense. I mean, I think that I think it was clever to not have the, because you don't really want Cody and Lance Archer to face off again.
No.
So using Arn and Jake was a good call. Yeah, I liked the promo. I thought the stare off was like, well, because like clearly they're not going to be able to do much physically. So like, but I mean, we always get a kick out of the Stooges on Retro Raw. So mm-hmm. You know, if they can morph more into that kind of style, here for it.
Well, and I like that they each kind of have, you know, a guiding force or whatever. I think that Lance Archer needs a little bit more character in terms of like not just being Jake Roberts' lackey, because Lance Archer's great, like he's awesome, but he kind of just feels like Jake Roberts' dude, whereas Cody doesn't really have that with Arn Anderson, right? Like Arn Anderson seems secondary to Cody, but I would say with Lance Archer and Jake Roberts, the balance is a little off.
Yeah, exactly. Elsewhere on the show, we also had one of my favorite parts, actually, and I did not expect to be singing this praise. Sean Spears' news was very good.
So good. Like
when he was like making fun of Dustin's painkiller addiction, but in quite a clever way, and basically like making a match for himself on Saturday. And then like when we came back, I loved like podcast JR turned up where he was like, let's just book the match. Let's just do it. Dustin, Sean Spears, go for it. Why not? What the hell? And so even though there's not really a build to the match, the two guys do kind of have a connection of story. So I'm here for it. I think this could be a pretty good undercard match at Double or Nothing. What did you make of Sean Spears this week?
Yeah, no, I was super into it, actually. I really, really liked it. Apparently, one of the ways to my heart is to just do a fake news broadcast, because I've loved it pretty much every time I've seen it.
Like, do you think you'll love it when Randy Orton does it in a couple of years?
I love RNN. I do. I've seen some of it. I love it. I mean, I'm still going to boo him, of course, because he's a dick. But I thought he was brilliant at it. I thought Sean Spears was brilliant at it here. It did remind me of RNN quite a lot because it's the same kind of thing. Yeah, it was really funny. I mean, having the ticker scroll along the bottom of the screen, just being so incredibly sincere in his news reading. I'm looking forward to Sean Spears and Dustin because there is a story there too, right? Like there is familiarity. Sean Spears has so much history with Cody. That's where the family alliance comes in. Like that's the thing about the relationships between the men in AEW that makes a lot of the stories pretty easy to tell, because you can kind of grab onto all of these bits of fully formed people.
It's when wrestling's the best, mm-hmm. when it all connects. And we should also mention before we talk about the main event, they've also added Chris Statlander and Britt Baker to the card after the tag match they had on Dynamite as well. So it's good to see there is a secondary women's match on Double or Nothing, Sandra. You must be happy about that.
A secondary women's match is good. Is it going to happen?
Yeah, as far as I know, it's still happening.
Well, I mean, is Britt Baker okay?
I think she's still in as of now.
Is she? Because I was listening to reports that her knee might be injured. I don't know. Like, when did they announce the match?
They announced it on Dynamite.
Right.
But I'm sure they announced it after her match. Okay, well, I will look this up while we are talking. But any thoughts on
this? I was listening to Wrestling Observer was reporting that her knee might be injured and that she was going for an MRI or whatever. And like, when Nyla Rose landed on her knee, it was really like bad. So, I don't know if she's going to be cleared for Saturday. I hope she is. That would be a good thing.
So it just says she did seem to have seriously injured her knee in the tag match, but she's still scheduled to face Statlander in the singles match. It's not been announced that she's been pulled. Okay. So I guess it's just kind of wait and see. Hopefully she is okay because she's got a really good run right now.
Yeah, I mean, like, I obviously, like, I do not want her to be injured because that would suck. Yeah, if Britt Baker versus Chris Statlander is happening, I think that's a good thing. I like having a secondary women's story. And that's one of the things about the tag match on Dynamite this week was there was progression in terms of women's stories, right? Like, for the first time in a while, I looked at every woman in the tag match and I thought, okay, I know who this person is. I know what her motivation is. I know why she's fighting this other person. And that's something that, like, even that amount of character development feels like steps in the right direction for AEW. So that's the kind of thing I do want to see more of. Like, Britt Baker is a dickhead dentist, and we know this, and she's awful, and she's up herself, and she's the worst person at this point, right? And Chris Statlander is kind of just your plucky babyface alien lady, but she wants to prove herself, and she and Britt Baker had a confrontation in the tag match, and that, you know, sets up the story for Double or Nothing, which is great. Like, I like when stories are set up in pro wrestling matches and can be paid off in more pro wrestling matches. Hikaru Shida is, you know, great and a babyface and the number one contender, and she's won a bunch, and she 100% deserves to have a title shot against Nyla Rose. And Nyla Rose is a big bad beast lady who is the champion, and she's the monster that needs to be slain. So I like the fact that I can point to the motivations I just want more of that. I want it to feel more fully formed. I want it to get to the point where, like, you know, Sean Spears versus Dustin makes sense because of this history and this history and this history. I want that kind of thing for the women too. And so that's why I'm like, I'm nervous about injuries and people being out, because that is just going to derail what little incremental progress that we've made.
Yeah, she's such a strong character that you kind of pulling her out of the equation is a big loss. So hopefully she is able to, you know, do something and be involved. The main event of Dynamite, though, was Matt Hardy against Sammy Guevara. Did you watch the fight version of AEW or the other version?
I watched the TNT version, I believe.
Sammy Guevara doing his cue cards, which was this time, but his sex life.
Oh, really?
He talked about, I usually say hit me up, but this time I got hit by the golf cart, so I can no longer make love. And then JR was like, we're hearing about Sammy Guevara's sex life. Sure. It was so good.
That's amazing. No, because I actually watched AEW live this week.
Okay. There you go.
So, yeah.
But I thought Matt Hardy and Sammy Guevara had a pretty fun match. Obviously, Matt was going to get the win because you don't want to have Matt Hardy lose so soon in a kind of TV match. But I thought Sammy was the perfect guy to put him in this match with. Sammy's able to kind of bump around for him. And I thought the match was fun. What did you make of it?
Really fun. Really, really fun. I loved it. Sammy Guevara is just a treasure, right? Like, he is one of those rare cases where he loses all the time and it doesn't matter, because I want to see him and I want to see his cue cards and I want to see him just, I don't know, be a little shit that gets kicked a lot. I don't know. He's just so good. And Matt Hardy is still so valuable in terms of wrestling. Like, he's good still, you know, like he's an older guy, but he can still go. So I really liked the match. And I think, again, the storyline and the relationship between the Elite and the Inner Circle makes it more interesting, because just on paper, flat with no story, Matt Hardy versus Sammy Guevara is probably still going to be fun because I like both of them. But I think them having, you know, like, Matt Hardy is obviously very upset about the murder of Vanguard 1 last week. I mean, I'm still upset about it. It's a bit hard to talk about. So he's going to be angry at the Inner Circle, and he's going to be angry at Chris Jericho's annoying little lackey who supports all of this atrocity. So I don't know. Like, that just kind of heightens it for me, and it makes it better. So I really enjoyed it.
And then, of course, post-match, we ended up getting the big brawl on the football field, where we saw the return of the Young Bucks. Taken out, they state the Kenny Omega was tied to the goalpost initially on the football field, and then the Young Bucks showed up to make the save, and then Hager and Santana are beating up Matt Jackson, and the Inner Circle got control. And then, and maybe my favorite visual, well, I mean, it's my favorite visual since the golf cart, but like, it's up there. Hangman Page running across the football field to do the clothesline and the 40-yard dash line in cowboy boots was my favorite thing.
It was really funny.
Died. It was so good. Hangman Page is my favorite.
Hangman Page is awesome. Hangman Page, like, remember a year ago when Hangman Page, it was a year ago that he fought Jericho, right?
No. A year ago he was supposed to fight Pac at Double or Nothing.
Oh, right. But then he won the Battle Royal instead, right?
Yeah. So he ended up on the Battle Royal. So, what a
but,
year.
I mean, remember, even like a year ago, we were like, okay, no, Adam Page is great. We really want to like him. But like, what do we like about this dude? He's just a dude. He's not just a dude anymore. He's the best dude. I love him.
I'm so excited for the Stadium Stampede match. I'm so my jam. So yeah, it should be a good time. I'm looking forward to
it. It should be Shenanigans Ahoy, which is, of course, like, perfect for you.
Yeah, it's really what I love. So
I'm excited about it too. I think Double or Nothing's going to be great.
There's also a lot of stuff happening over in NXT there, a lot of stuff. The big talking point, obviously, is when Karrion Kross was alerting us to what he was going to be doing in NXT after he beat Liam. Liam, I think his name is, because he had that in his...
It said Liam on his butt. I don't know what his name was.
So we'll just say Liam. Mm-hmm. Tommaso Ciampa came out, and Tommaso Ciampa basically challenged them to take over In Your House, and he ended the promo by saying, welcome to the main event. So, I mean, we're not wasting time. We're straight into Karrion Kross and Tommaso Ciampa, and I'm kind of here for it.
I'm kind of here for it too. They both are very dynamic personalities, you know, Psycho Killer versus Killer Cross. I know it's not his name anymore, but they're both killers, so that's cool. Yeah, I'm here for it for sure. I can't complain at all. I think it should be really good. And it shows that they have a lot of faith in Karrion Kross right off the bat, right? Like, not only does he have this amazing entrance with Scarlet and just, I mean, I don't know, the cinematic feel of their entrance is just brilliant, but he can go. And they obviously trust him to be paired with one of the biggest stars in NXT just straight off the bat. So it seems like he's going to be a player, and I'm here for it.
And we also saw Phantasma get the win. Right, I'm going to try and pronounce it again. Don't tell me, but I'm going to try because I always find this difficult. Is it El Hijo del Fantasma or is it El?
El
Is
Hijo
it
del
El El
Fantasma.
El Hijo El Io Io or Hijo?
Hijo. Hijo.
Hijo. El E
The
El
H is
Io.
silent.
Oh my God. El Hijo del Fantasma. I'm just going to call him Phantasma for now, just because
That's fine.
it's quicker for the podcast. Phantasma beat Akira Tozawa, so he now advances in the Cruiserweight tournament. I don't understand the brackets. I don't understand how it works, but he is through, and I will accept that and just go with it.
Yeah, 'cause he got the most points in
Sure.
his side. That's kind of what I've
Sure.
determined. Now that I've been seeing the tournament matches again for the past couple weeks, it's whoever gets the most wins on their side, which is why, you know, we also have a triple threat later on that we can talk about. But yeah, Phantasma going on is it makes sense to me. I really like Akira Tozawa, like I like him a lot, but it seems like they're kind of behind Hijo del Phantasma right now. And it's a kind of a good way to debut him, right? Like if
And
they want to.
is he going to be the man behind all the attacks? You know, because we don't know.
Yeah, because we don't know, and I'm intrigued as to whether he is or not, because obviously the attackers were speaking Spanish when, you know, they attacked on this show, so it's, I don't know, it's interesting. There are little story threads. Like I liked the moment where Hijo del Fantasma and Akira Tozawa were talking in the parking lot too. Like it was just a really nice moment of respect, like saying like, oh, you're the man, and like, oh, you're so good, and then Akira Tozawa getting attacked right away. You know, it doesn't seem like Hijo del Fantasma would be orchestrating that because there was so much respect between them, but wouldn't that be an interesting turn? I don't know. Is that going to lead to a feud between the two of them? I don't know, but I'd be here for it. I like that there are threads out there and I kind of want to find out more. You know, I love a whodunit, any sort of
You do.
whodunit.
Listen, I love a kidnap. I love a kidnap and a whodunit story. They're great. And then the other, I get the, you know, you talk about the triple threat because later on in the show we saw Drake Maverick get a win over Kushida,
Which was
which means that,
very unexpected.
well, yeah. I mean, at this point, there was no way Drake Maverick was not winning this match. But they did a good job to kind of build the tension of is he going to win? But like, so now it's going to be Drake Maverick, Kushida, and Jake Atlas in a triple threat next week to determine who moves through to face Phantasma. Have I got it right?
Yeah. I
Okay,
like it.
because.
I think they've been doing like a pretty decent job of telling this cruiserweight story. Like normally with the tournaments, it's kind of just who is better. And I like who is better in tournaments because, you know, like you should want to win the tournament. You should want the prize. But I think some of these little in stories have been really great, specifically the Drake Maverick one, right? Like using his release and using that to get me behind him on an emotional level is totally working. Like I would have been into Drake Maverick versus Kushida anyway because I really like Kushida and I love Drake Maverick with all my heart. So of course I was going to be into it, but I think just the drama of what's going to happen if Kushida won that match, then it would just be Kushida versus Hijo del Fantasma, which would be a great final for a tournament. And is probably what we're going to end up getting, but this worked for me. And I think having Jake Atlas out there ringside because he's become like a supporter of Drake Maverick in this, right? Like when he beat Drake Maverick, his promo afterwards was, man, I'm rooting for him. Like I'm rooting for him so much. And that's an interesting relationship too. Is Jake Atlas going to turn on Drake Maverick? Is he going to help Drake Maverick? Like, how's this going to go in the triple threat? What's that relationship dynamic going to be? I'm here for all of it. Like, I can't wait to see that triple threat. I want to see how it plays out.
I think for me the interesting part is more about Phantasma and the you know the SUV and is he involved in sort of beating up Tozawa or not? That to me is the more interesting part. But I mean, yeah, I think if you're invested in the characters, that like this is good enough. I think it's decent.
And I'm such a Jake
We
Atlas
also
fan too that you know, seeing him get to advance to another thing makes me happy, because I think that they're, you know, they're adding some character to Jake Atlas already. So it seems like they're at least somewhat behind him. If they could, I think it's really funny that they call it the Rainbow DDT, though. Like, instead of the LGB DDT, which is the actual name of the move. And I'm sure it's something like they just want to copyright it. But
yeah,
they're the like, we'll let you be gay, but I mean, not at least like that gay.
Yeah, don't be that gay. Right. We also in the show got Timothy Thatcher wanting to challenge Matt Riddle, and Matt Riddle later on tells us that there, it's going to be a cage match. How do you feel about the cage match being the setting?
I mean, he said it in an interesting way, right? He's like, a place that's familiar to both of us, a cage. I'm here for it. Timothy Thatcher and Matt Riddle, obviously, like, they're great together. They're both great at what they do. And a cage match, it seems abrupt. Like, it seems kind of quick to already have a cage match. But at the same time, I'm not going to complain about it because it's probably going to be real good.
We also on the show got Roderick Strong taking on Dexter Lumis. I actually really like this match. I thought that Roderick Strong was a good person to have a match with a serial killer, because he kind of, I don't know, it worked for me more. How did the match work for you? Are you still on board with Dexter Lumis? Do you like the serial killer aspect? And what did you make of the match?
I'm 100% on board with Dexter Lumis. I think he's great, and I feel like the ambiance of the emptiness of the arena kind of highlights Dexter Lumis. Right?
He's like the one person that benefits.
Yeah, because I feel like he, kind of how I felt about Bray Wyatt and Braun Strowman too, how that uncomfortable silence actually added to portions of that match. I feel like the uncomfortable silence just adds to the creepiness and the kind of spine tingling, hair standing up on the back of your neck aspect of Dexter Lumis for me. And so him just like staring intently off into the distance, or like staring intently into the camera, it just like, it chills my soul. In a good way. Like, I really like it when my soul is chilled, because then I'm feeling something. Like, I want wrestling to elicit feelings for me. I think that he's also real good at wrestling, and I think Roderick Strong is obviously great at wrestling, so the match itself was pretty good.
Who knew that we would get to a point where, like, you know, we have this serial killer who we love, because of course we do, and then, you know, the Undisputed Era are beating him up, and then Velveteen Dream comes out to make the save, and you're just like, oh no, it's Velveteen Dream.
Right? Like, I'm so much more into the serial killer than the flamboyant man in purple with glitter. Like, how did this happen? Like, I'm not pro-murder. That's not something I advocate in my life. But I just want to make that clear, in case anyone's wondering. Firmly anti-murder. Like, because
the thing is, when Dexter Lumis at the end, like, had Roderick Strong and he was just, like, stroking him like a cat,
oh,
I was so
creepy,
here for
right?
it.
I'm so here for it. Maybe he's the reincarnation of the stalker. Maybe that's why I love him so much.
If the stalker
was serial killer.
Good.
But, what a pairing too, right? Velveteen Dream and Dexter Lumis just seem like such an odd pair, but I'm kind of here for it. It was the most interested in a Velveteen Dream thing I've been in a while. Because that Roderick Strong feud just killed my love for Velveteen Dream. But if he's kind of pairing up with the serial killer dude to go against the Undisputed Era, that just seems like, it seems like an odd enough pairing that it just might work.
And then also we got we saw Mia Yim beat Santana Garrett, but the main point of it was after the match when Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae came out and they were mocking her, and then Mia Yim ended up knocking Gargano off the apron and Candice LeRae going for her, and then Keith Lee runs out, and then later on the show Keith Lee challenges Gargano for a match at TakeOver. Are you happier that they are, I mean, what do you think of the dynamic, but also are you happy that they are seemingly going for a one-on-one match before they go to the sort of mixed tag?
I'm fine with it. I'm fine with a one-on-one match first. I mean, the mixed tag would make more sense, I guess, but they can build to that, I guess. It doesn't, like, the order of it doesn't bother me that much, because I feel like the feud is still Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae versus Mia Yim and Keith Lee. So I would like to see Candice versus Mia as well. Like, if you're going to do the one-on-one match, it seems like it would make sense to have both of them. But yeah, like, I mean, I like it. And I like the fact that it was, I think it was Johnny that started the promo, right? Like, Johnny came out to kind of confront Mia. I love that, because that means that Johnny and Candace do feel actually on even keel right now, which is good. Like, she doesn't just feel like his wife, and he doesn't just feel like her husband. It seems like they are a power couple coming to ruin your lives. And I really like them as the power couple that's coming to ruin your lives. I love their snark. I love their insincerity. And I think Mia Yim is just kind of, she's, you know, she's a badass, and she's going to stand her ground, and she's incredibly likable, and I am a fan of her, and Keith Lee is awesome, and we know that he's awesome. He's great. So, and Keith Lee's still the champion, right?
Yeah, Keith's the champion, and Johnny would be the challenger.
So Johnny's challenging for the title, which is why that match makes sense, I guess, because if this is all a bid to get Johnny Gargano his North American championship back, then, you know, fine. It works for me. I like it a lot. And I like the fact that Johnny was the one to start the promo against Mia, just because you can tell that they're in it together.
And I think the Johnny and Kansas City partnership works better when you've got like Keith Lee and Mia Yim to bounce off of. Like, it's just, it's not them just like laughing at their own dinner table anymore. It's like there's people to fight. So
yeah, and they have a goal, right? Like, they're actually going after people and trying to accomplish a thing.
And hopefully this leads to Candice LeRae eventually deciding that she wants the title again.
Yeah, absolutely. I want her to challenge for the title. She 100% should. I mean, the champion's a dick, but, you know, I guess they can both be dicks fighting.
Speaking of the Women's Championship, the NXT Women's Championship, the main event of this show was Rhea Ripley versus Io Shirai. And we kind of got similar to what we got when we got Charlotte versus Io, and we didn't really get the full match. It was like 7 minutes. And we got a DQ in the end because Charlotte Flair showed up. It's going to lead to a three-way, we assume, at Takeover Around Your House.
I think they announced it, didn't they?
Yeah, they announced it at the end, didn't they? Yeah.
I can't remember if it was on the show, but I've seen a graphic.
No, it wasn't on the show. No, because I remember being like, it's going to happen, but we haven't heard it's happening yet.
Yeah,
but it was announced.
I saw
afterwards.
A graphic on Twitter, so it's floating around.
I mean, this is kind of in some ways what they used to do in the Attitude Era. You know, you would have like a match where like you think it's two big stars and somebody's going to win, and then somebody interferes and it's a three-way. It's like the formula is sound. I felt like I should feel more for it than I did. And I don't know if that was the execution of it, but I'm totally here for the match, and I think they did the right thing in doing the kind of DQ, no finish, whatever, because you don't really want to have Rhea Ripley or Io Shirai lose on TV. But I am
we've just seen Charlotte versus Io, and we've just seen Charlotte versus Rhea. I think I said last week they're probably going to do a triple threat, right?
Yeah, you called it. I'm a little bit kind of, I feel like Io Shirai's blending in the background a little bit, and I don't really like it.
She is, but I don't think, I mean, she doesn't seem like an afterthought, though. I think that she and Rhea are just, they're very similar in a lot of ways, because they both, you know, are dark characters, and they're badasses, and they're awesome. And I think maybe they're just more similar than is great for this feud, but I really liked their match, the bits of it that we got to see. You know, the 7 minutes of it was awesome. I don't know if it wasn't as good as Charlotte versus Rhea, but I think it was better than Charlotte versus Io. So Rhea Ripley maybe is just really good at empty arena matches. I don't know. But I liked what we got to see from them, and I would like to see more. I think Charlotte Flair coming in and being the dick who breaks up our fun it's probably good, because it does make me want to see more of Rhea versus Io down the line. I want to see who would win that confrontation, because we don't know right now. So it sets up stuff for the future. It feels a little bit lazy, just because I don't know why Charlotte would come in and break up the match. I don't know why Charlotte would want a triple threat, because that doesn't benefit her, right? Because if, you know, if Rhea pins Io or Io pins Rhea, then Charlotte loses her title. So why would she? She's watched wrestling before. Surely she would know that that would lead to a triple threat, right? Like, it doesn't seem logical, unless her whole deal now is just, I'm Charlotte Flair, I'm so good, I'm above everything, I can just beat everyone up with kendo sticks and woo at you, and that is my whole deal. But that almost seems like a flattening of Charlotte Flair's character. So I don't know, like, maybe that's where you felt like you should feel a little bit more, because there
I think you've encapsulated it well into why I was maybe thinking that way. I mean, I said on the Power Slam podcast with Finn this week, I didn't feel good about Charlotte Flair beating Ruby Riott the way she did on Raw. Like, I just didn't like it as much, because I didn't feel like it was, I think there's a way to sort of have somebody lose, but there's also a way to job them out. And I felt like Ruby was jobbed out.
Why are they having Charlotte Flair face Ruby Riott when, like, why aren't they having her just face enhancement talent or like Dana Brooke?
Yeah, exactly, because it just feels like it was needless, because then you've got Ruby Riott's got to try and come back from this, and how does she
Because
come
Ruby's
back
someone
when...
that, like, she could easily be in title contention, right? Like, I would love to see Ruby Riott versus in another universe, not like currently because of the way they've been handling Ruby Riott on TV. But Ruby Riott, as a performer, is someone that I would love to see face Asuka for a championship match. I think you could build a great story there, and the match would be outstanding, right? So, like, why are you just having her be just another person?
I don't get it. I just
It
don't get it.
baffles me. Like, especially because Ember Moon's out right now. Like, your options for title contention are very limited on Raw, from what I've seen. You know? Like, I haven't been watching a ton of Raw, but I've been kind of catching it every once in a while. And I'm not really seeing any front runners, unless you turn Kairi Sane.
Which I guess is possible, but do you want? Yeah, I mean, I think Kairi is going to turn fairly soon. I just get the feeling that we're en route to that. But overall, I thought the NXT was really good this week. I thought it packed more of a punch than it has the last few weeks. I thought there was a lot of good. I think because now they've got the destination of TakeOver In Your House, and we're now starting to get that card come to light with the triple threat and with Gargano and Lee and the tease of Candice LeRae and Mia Yim, and I assume Timothy Thatcher and Matt Riddle and the Cruiserweight tournament. So they're building a lot of stuff up.
They are building stuff up, and I feel like there was more story progression this week on NXT than we've seen recently. Because I think NXT's been solid as just like, if you want to watch a fun wrestling show, it's been a fun enough wrestling show. But there have been a lot of enhancement matches, and there have been a lot of just exhibition things that haven't really gone anywhere. They're not useless. They're fun. They're good. They're enjoyable. But I think the stuff on this week's show had a little bit more of a purpose leading toward TakeOver In Your House. And I feel like some of the characters are becoming a little bit more fleshed out too, which is good.
So I think that's it for us. We've pretty much covered everything. We will be back on Sunday with on Patreon with the Double or Nothing review. So I think that's pretty, unless you have anything else to add, Sandra.
I'm trying to think if there was anything else to discuss, but I think that's pretty much it. Unless you wanted to tell the people about the Hulk Hogan Real American video that we haven't talked about yet.
Okay, yes, that's what we need to do. So Sandra had never seen this, and I had seen it years ago, and just it, I knew it. I knew it existed, and it just never came into my mind. But the Hulk Hogan music video for Real American, that I think came out in like 1986, because Brian Alvarez and Vinny reviewed it on one of the recent things that's on YouTube. So I thought it'd be really funny to show Sandra the music video and then show her their reaction. So Sandra, talk to us about Hulk Hogan Real American, the music video. Like, what does that entail?
I feel like Hulk Hogan Real American, the music video, is more over the top in terms of patriotism than EC3's old USA Guy vignettes when he was Derek Bateman. Like, do you remember the
By
USA
a
Guy
mile.
vignettes, right?
Oh yeah, that was like, yeah, that was nothing compared to this. I mean, we're
Because this
talking like
starts
you
with,
see
like,
whole.
you see Hogan, like, it starts with, like, all American flags and all this kind of stuff, but, like, when you really start to get the feel of the music video is when you see pictures of a young Terry Bollea, like, in stars. They're like, he's in the stars of the flag, and then it shows him, like, playing guitar and stuff. And then it, like, goes into him playing guitar in front of all of these United States landmarks and in front of the flag. Like, I love when he is next to the Statue of Liberty and he's as big as the Statue of Liberty playing the guitar. Or, like, and it's also interspersed with wrestling footage. I don't know why this one just cracked me up the most, but they show him against, was it Nikolai Volkov that he was facing?
Yes, it was.
So he's facing Nikolai Volkov. They show him headbutting the Russian flag. Like, it's a flag. Why are you headbutting a flag, Hulk Hogan? But of course he is, because America. Like, all of the imagery is just hilarious. There's a bit where they have Mount Rushmore and, like, he's a fifth head of Mount Rushmore just, like, above it. And then I also loved the bit where he's riding a motorcycle and it's comparing to, like, someone riding a horse, like a Native American riding a horse. The
And like
whole thing is just amazing.
as Hogan, like it's so good. Like as Hogan is hitting the heels, buildings fall down. Because when he...
when it comes crashing down and it hurts inside, it shows bomb footage. It shows footage of a building being bombed and crashing down. And then it shows him getting, like, hit in a wrestling ring and having to sell a move. Because those are equivalent.
And he's also, like, he's playing guitar on, like, a... Was it, like, a WWF? No, it was, like, a USA guitar.
I think it was, like, a USA flat a guitar.
But he was, like the size of the Statue of Liberty. And he was just placed really badly onto, like, the Grand Canyon and, like, all these different places. It is so good. There's one point where he's on the motorbike and he does, like, a salute, like, a Native American. It's, oh, my God. It's just incredible. So it's on YouTube. Hulk Hogan Real American Music Video. Look it up. I mean, Sandra, would you recommend it?
Absolutely, 100%. It's probably one of the best videos I've ever seen in my entire life. It's just, the funny thing about it to me is that it really is the perfect encapsulation of America, right? Because, like, it doesn't accomplish anything. It shows all of these egregious images in American history, but it thinks it's doing a good job because it's like, fuck yeah, the flag.
So good. And also, the irony is that one of the people that Hulk is representing is Martin Luther King.
Yep, Martin Luther King Jr. makes an appearance.
Can't make up.
It is quite something, especially if you see it as just... I mean, it is an atrocity, and I love it completely.
Okay, so Sandra, what are the plugs?
Okay, you can follow me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Follow Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Follow us on Instagram. I'm at SandraRuth. He is at MCINTOKNNY. And Inside the Ropes is at Inside_the Ropes there. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes is where you can get tons of bonus content from us and keep us doing this podcasting thing during quarantines. It's really the only way that we can survive at this point. So thank you so much to all of our patrons. You get the Power Slam podcast a day early at certain tiers. You can hear Kenny and me talk about retro ITR, which is always a blast. Like, I'm actually having a lot of fun in 2000. I just reviewed Judgment Day with Kenny and Finn yesterday, and Judgment Day 2000 was a good pay-per-view. And I had a lot of fun recording with you guys and talking about it. So that's all up there on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, like I said before. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes is the other main way you can support us, by watching our YouTube videos. Kenny's been doing interviews with some of the released WWE wrestlers. There's a clip of CM Punk talking about asking Stone Cold Steve Austin to give him a stunner. That was really enjoyable from StarCast. Was that at the Chicago StarCast, right?
Chicago StarCast, yeah.
Yeah. That was a really fun show. So if you want to see an exclusive clip from Chicago StarCast, that's up on our YouTube channel. Tons of videos going up all the time. So just, you know, remember to like the videos and comment on them and get them all, like, up in the algorithm. We really appreciate that kind of stuff. And I think those are all the plugs for now.
That is all the plugs. Who should play us out, Sandra?
Let's see. Should we play Karrion Kross's theme? Just because it's, like, really good.
It is a belter, yeah. Absolutely. Okay, so here's Karrion Kross and Scarlett's theme. Thank you for all your support, everybody. We hope you have a great weekend. Enjoy Double or Nothing if you're going to watch it. And we'll be back soon. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Bye.